Week four, everybody. Lofa, how you feeling?
Awesome. Just awesome.
On this episode, we got Glover Quinn, who does a podcast about the Detroit Lions, but himself was a baller in the league. So looking for him to break down this stuff from a Lions perspective. But then I also want to get to know him a bit and just find out about his journey, because anyone who's made it in the league for quite some time, I got to know how they got there and how they lasted. You know what I'm saying?
It's the part I love the most, the journey.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we got Kenny Mack. Kenny McIntosh, our MVP, or my MVP from the preseason at least, sitting down with us from the Seahawks. So lots to talk about with him. And then when we look around the league or look around football in general, there are quitters in college football, Lofa.
Quitters. What a bunch of losers.
Yeah. Hey, as you guys are watching, as you're listening, remember, engagement is the name of the game here on the All Day Show. We're not building an audience, Lofa. We're building a family. So if you guys hear something that we missed, something that we got wrong, something that you wanted to hear more of, make sure you're filling up the chat, loading up the comments, and putting in plenty of your opinion so that we can see it, analyze it, and get to it whenever we get to it.
We'll get to it. I promise. I promise you.
Hey, shout out to one of our sponsors right off the bat here. It's Simply Seattle, everybody. Go to simplyseattle.com for all of your Simply Seattle apparel needs. This Chuck Knox-inspired Seahawks throwback hat that I am wearing, you can find at Simply Seattle. Lofa's got the Sonics jersey on there. They're the world's largest Seattle Sonics retailer, but they got all the Seahawks stuff, Husky stuff, Mariner stuff that you need. SimplySeattle.com, and use our promo code ALLDAY10, spelled out all day and then 10, ALLDAY10 for 10% off at simplyseattle.com. All right, Lofa. Last year, the Seahawks went into Detroit and we won it in a walk-off with Tyler Lockett, if you remember that, right? You know, rolling to his right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hits yeah, Tyler Lockett.
Was that overtime, I believe?
Yeah.
Another one of Geno's just amazing performances, ladies and gentlemen, especially for all the Geno haters out there. Yeah. But yeah, it was incredible. I remember it. And I feel like we play these guys every year. Like, I feel like they're in our division.
Yeah, we've played them somehow like four times in the last 3 years. I don't know how that's possible.
No. So
we play them every year now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's some close ones, right? And some scary ones. But yep. I don't know if I should even mention it.
What?
We got a little bit of a streak. We got a little bit of a streak.
You can mention it. Do you feel like there are commentator jinxes? Are you scared of that?
Well, you always told me you were scared of it.
I am scared. And I'm asking if you are.
Oh, no. We've owned them in recent history, ladies and gentlemen. And I mean, that maybe that could jinx us, me saying that, but I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens out there. The big headline for the Seahawks is Chenna is back at practice. Because it's a Monday night game, we actually don't have the injury reports on the same schedule that we should. So no official word yet, but he's at least back at practice in full pads, running around and with the guys again. And I mean, if he can play, especially in this game coming up, but if he can play, you know, and sustain being on the field, for, you know, what am I trying to say? Stop me. My brain locked up. Did you guys hear
big
that?
Big boost. Right. It's always good to get a Trojan back in the mix. Right.
I knew you sneaked that in there.
Yeah. I'll pick this up for you, partner.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's one of our like emotional leaders too. It's not just what he does on the field, but it's how he picks up everybody else, elevates everybody else's play. So big boost if we can get him back, but I wouldn't rush him back. So we'll see, you know, that's kind of, they're in the feeling out mode or stages of practice. Like, okay, he's cleared to do enough activity that he can tolerate. And then he's been 4 weeks out. So like, you got to get back into playing shape. That's something that you got to take into consideration. So if he does, it would be he'd be on a pitch count is what I would imagine.
They were putting videos of him at practice up online yesterday. And I turned my phone around towards my son. I said, hey, check it out. Chenna's back at practice. And the video was him just sort of doing like side shuffles, very sort of lazily, sort of warming up, you know, as they do. And my son said, he's not hustling at all.
Oh.
I said, buddy, I think they're just getting loose and getting warmed up. But he's like, well, he's doing the side shuffles that you guys, you make us do at like practice, but he's just kind of being lazy, Dad. He's coming off an injury, bud. Calm down.
Sounds like you're calling out McDonald on his coaching, his warmups. Coach Davern has a bone to pick. Is that what I'm hearing? Yeah.
No, not at all. It's funny because the way that pro athletes move and being out there at practices, sometimes you're getting to see the guys move around. They're so smooth and stuff. But what I notice is you guys don't really move fast until you have to, sort of sometimes, you know? And so he was just, I don't know, he was getting loose. But the boy
has got some criticism. 10 miles an hour every time.
Even in your side shuffles to warm up.
That's actually, I run laterally faster than I did forward.
Can you imagine? That's how slow I was. The 40 at the combine sideways.
I just lined up sideways and just shuffled all the way. It might have been close. I'm not even lying to you.
It would have made headlines. It would have gone viral.
Could have got me drafted higher. Possibly.
So we don't have the injury report, but Williams and Murphy. Big story here. Is both of them out? You know, will both of them be out? Can one of them go? We brought in a cornerback and a nose tackle. I can get their names, sign them to the practice squad. So could be bringing in some depth there on the line. But if those two guys can't go, that's huge.
That's my biggest concern, partner. Mm-hmm. You know, the only silver lining I have is that we played 3.5 quarters without, I think, both of them, and we still stood up strong against the run game. But there's a much bigger run, better run game coming to town, or we're going to see. And with Montgomery and Gibbs and Glover, we'll get to it, you know, and give us the inside scoop. But these are two really talented running backs, a tough O-line. It's this is going to be a real test. And then all the weapons they have outside. So, you know, what I was most excited about going into the season was our depth on O and D-line in the trenches. Like, we've had injuries there before, and so we need guys to step up. Mm-hmm. You know, possibly Draymond Jones going back inside for a few snaps, but I like him really outside, where he's really found a home as an outside linebacker. You know, he looked great last game. So we'll see how, you know, McDonald, that's what I love about him. He, you know, schematically, or just he'll move some pieces around or do what he has to change up like the front.
Yeah. Well, and Campbell, I mean, you know, former tight end, but guy in the trenches, he likes to mix it up in there and run the ball and control the clock that way. I mean, Montgomery, 51 rushes on the season, 231 yards. He's running at a 4.5 clip.
That's good.
That's kind of scary. And then Gibbs behind him, he's got only 40 carries, but at a 5.2 per so far, with 207 yards just on the young season so far. But these two backs for them, and that's a huge story.
Yeah, they are loaded, you know, on offense in particular. Great tight end, two great receivers, even a third that can give you trouble. So this is our, you know, test for – and when everybody – okay, they wanted to talk trash and say, you guys haven't played anybody, even though – see if I can get this right. In week one, New England beat Cincy, who I think beat Arizona, who beat the Bucks, who beat Detroit. So we should win this easy. And I have no idea if that was correct, but I know there's some kind of a link between, you know, yeah, like a little, you teach Little League. Yeah. So you beat one team, mm-hmm, and you're like, oh, they're no good. And then they go on and they beat every other team.
Yeah.
And now in the pros, it doesn't give you confidence. Yeah. But as a little league team, you're like, well, we smashed them and then they smoked them.
Right.
So we're going to kill this team. And then you go out and lose. That's usually what happens.
We should beat this team twice removed.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I went to an acting conservatory. You went to real college. So that must make sense, I guess.
I went to real college to play football.
So then what's the game plan then? Like, load up the box, make Jared Goff beat you? I mean,
I would absolutely. And yeah, Goff, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he is one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And it's I put the ball in his hands and make him beat us rather than these two running backs. They've proven they can beat other teams. So it's, and if you just, it's, if your defense is out there for a long time, you get tired. It's deflating when they just can keep running the ball over and over. It's like, you got to stop the run first. So yes, partner, put the ball in Goff's hands. And even though they got great receivers, lean on our secondary who are great in coverage.
Well, we got these guys possibly out. We don't really know, but the Seahawks still are number one in the league in pressures after week three. Are they going to get to Goff and how many times? I mean, I know the injuries play a big factor, but we got to keep this up. How sustainable is this? Is this something we can rely on throughout the rest of the season? Because I hope so.
I mean, I'm just going to point to recent history of Mike McDonald, right? Like what he did, you know, Baltimore, Michigan, seems like everywhere he goes, the rush gets, you know, just way better. So yes, I believe it's sustainable, even through injuries, you know, so I'm expecting it to stay at a high level and he'll just get creative, right? He'll send the safeties or Dotson again, you know, so there's no shortage of weapons over there. I think we can hang our hat on that. We're going to be one of the better pressure teams for the remainder of the season.
Nice. We're speaking of depth, we brought in Jason Peters for a visit. I think he might have even worked out. Is that a deal, no deal for you? What does it mean? I mean, he was here last year. Everybody loved him. McDonald's, I think the quote was, they're not going to do anything. If anything happens, it might be this week next week or the week after was the quote. But yeah, thoughts on that?
Yeah, interesting move. I believe Peters is my age. I think he's 42, right? I'm pretty sure we were like either the same draft class or like one apart. But this is a story that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, you know, when Tom Brady was still, you know, playing like 20 plus years, this guy's been in the trenches for 18, 19 years. And my God, how bad my body still hurts. I can't imagine how he feels. And he's still doing it. Like he's still going to workouts. What's up, partner? What do you got?
I just looked him up here. Our audience, I wish that they could almost like chime in live and guess the year of Jason Peters' birth, because it's way before most people listening.
No, you gotta guess. What is it?
You got to guess?
83.
Oh, off by one. 1982, everybody.
We are the same. When's his birthday? We are the same age.
January 22nd, 1982.
So he's already 42?
He is 42 years old from Queen City, Texas. 6'4", 328 pounds.
Man, savage.
Went to college at Arkansas and got out in 2003.
Yeah, dude. That is not talked about enough.
Man, like, came into the league with the Buffalo Bills in 2004. Guys, it's 2024 if you check your calendars. That's a 20-year NFL career. He was in
the
league
the year before me.
Wow. Wow. Wow, man. I didn't realize that. I'm kind of overwhelmed right now, honestly. Yeah. It's crazy.
And like even, you know, and I don't like to give Bruins credit, but Mercedes Lewis, I think he's in like year 18 or something. I mean, he monster.
Yeah. Well, the big talk online, especially amongst Seahawks fans and in Seahawks circles, is the offensive line, which needs to shore some things up. And I mean, this guy, I mean, look, he's had an incredible career, no doubt. 20 years in the league is a long time, though. Is this an answer that you're a fan of as a Seahawks fan, or is this, I mean, how much does this really help if he can come in?
A lot of experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even just like being like a Jackie Moon player/coach, like, you know, we'll work him in and get him back into shape. Cause like, that's probably the biggest concern. I know he could still do it. And it's just making sure you don't wear him out before, you know, then we need another alignment. Right. So, they'll be smart about it, but yeah, he would absolutely help. I've played against him. He's a beast. So yeah. I'm excited about it in terms of what it can do and what it could mean for the guys next to him in terms of speeding up their process on how to play this game, because he's played guard. He's primarily a tackle, but he's played some guard, and it's just a big body, and he's just mean. Just tough.
Do you think that's where they'd be looking at him in this offensive line? Where would they slot him in?
Yeah, like swing position. So you got to play guard and tackle, and okay. Like, you know, knowledge wise, it would be easy for a 20-year vet. So it's just, you know, wherever they see, not where he's comfortable, because he can play all four. I mean, hell, he could probably play center, but just I'd see them playing him, you know, either at the guard or tackle positions.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. You guys, Geno Smith in dome games. This stat comes to us from our guy McNasty. Geno Smith has played four games in true domes over the last two seasons. Okay.
True domes.
So meaning truly an indoor stadium. Cause like, you know how SoFi down here is like a roof, but it's open on the sides. So maybe we're not including those games.
No.
Yeah.
A quasi dome, huh? I was like, wait, did we play in Safeco one time and they like had the close the roof and then open it? I didn't mean to get you off track there, partner, but
no, it's fine. You hit me with the quasi dome. I can't, like, right now I'm thinking the quasi moto of the quasi dome, the quasi moto of the Notre Domo.
Quasi domo. Okay.
Anyway, partner. He's got good numbers in these true dome games though. 94 of 137 for 68% there, 1200 yards, 10 touchdowns to one interception, and a rating of 118.6. So Geno looking to dominate in this game, and he's put up really good games against the Lions also, some high scoring games in his time.
It's going to dominate. and you know what I heard? What I heard is, sounds like we need to build a little roof over our stadium, over Lumen. If this is what he does, come on.
Well, we'll have to build a roof and walls.
Start the GoFundMe. Let's go.
The offense under him in these games has averaged 38 points, never scored under 32. Damn. So take the over is what I'm hearing.
That just changed my score prediction.
Sticking with the offense. Well, actually, Bet Online. That's a good, let's here. I missed my segue. Bet Online, everybody. Bet Online, the world's number one most trusted betting platform and your number one source for everything football. Bet Online, the game starts here. You can use their mobile app or go on the website, betonline.com. Proud sponsor of Believe and a proud sponsor of us here on the show. Sticking with offense, Noah Fant. I got a question. Noah Fant, despite the one drive last week, how do we really get him going? Or is this just something we don't do in Seattle?
I mean, if it was a breakout game, you know, I think he was 6 of 6 for 60 yards last week. So they're working him in. And, you know, where he is most lethal to me is the check down, anything over the middle, and just turning up field. Guys don't want to hit him. I saw guys making business decisions out there. Yeah. Like, oh, shit. You know, he caught it. Now what do we do? But then, and he's a vertical threat, like with his speed. And I really like anything like a deep over a corner, let him use his size, length, and speed. But because, like I said before, he's not traditionally one of those, you know, quick guys. Like when he does his best work in the short intermediate, it's like a catch and then just barreling through people. Like just no one wants to hit him.
But as a team, I mean, because it doesn't even matter. It seems what coach comes in, what coordinator comes in, just as a team, historically in my fandom as a Seahawk fan, we get these tight ends in here and then it doesn't really seem like much happens. Is it just, is there like a memo from the ownership group or something? Cause it doesn't matter what the regime is. We don't really seem to use the tight ends in the way that other teams use them. I mean, is Noah Fant better than Laporta, or is Laporta better than Noah Fant? But Laporta's got bigger numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because some teams just don't use a tight end, and I don't know why. Said it time and time before. It is the biggest mismatch traditionally you got a guy anywhere from 6'3 to 6'5 at tight end that can move, and they, you know, they probably have a basketball background. So even if you're blanket coverage right on him, they can just stick out one paw and snag that ball. So I don't know why they don't do it. I would, if I ever had a team, that's exactly where I'm investing in my franchise's future and using them. But yeah, you're right. Like, you go back, like even Zach Miller, it was, you know, maybe a combination of some bad luck with injury that led to us not using him a lot, but, talented guy. We got him here, paid him big bucks, and we won a Super Bowl. Like, so he definitely probably commanded, you know, some attention from defenses, but, Jimmy Graham, when we traded for him, right, he had surprisingly good numbers, but wasn't like a focal point or used like Laporta is, like Kelsey, like Kittle, you know, even just like when he was in New Orleans. I mean, the guy, he's like 6'7", you know, and can jump like a 40-inch vertical. Like, I feel like I could have thrown to him.
Yeah. Well, the injury though, too, right? Like that injury was brutal. That
the patella. Yeah.
I have to apologize for me clearing my throat like that in everybody's ears. I accidentally hit the wrong mute button. I meant to mute it. Anyway, sorry.
I was on one. I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear it? Okay, good. Then ignore what I'm saying then. Ignore that. Well, okay. I'm looking up the numbers though, actually, for the season. Fant, 9 catches for 85. And then just because I brought up Laporta, Laporta's at 8 catches for 94. So they're pretty much almost exactly equal to this point of the season. Laporta is going for an average of 11.8 though. And Fant's got 9.4. So, I mean, I honestly, both teams are using at least, if we're calling that their number one tight end, they're almost using them exactly the same way so far to date in this season.
Yep.
Hey, here's something I don't want to talk about, okay? But Jason Myers is having a good season, and I feel like since we've been on his case in years past, we should give him flowers when he's doing well. So yeah. I want to do that, but at the same time, I don't want to talk about it because I don't want it to go the other way, but he's doing pretty good so far. But let's not talk about it. But he is doing pretty good, but don't mention it, okay?
He looks great. I'm going to mention it. I'm going to give him some love, man. Like, because anytime he misses one, everybody gets on him. Kicking, this is a tough position. Like, you're literally on the sideline. You have to stay warmed up as if you're playing, like, you know, you have everything in rhythm. And that's probably the biggest thing for a kicker, kind of like a golfer. And you could get in your head. So, yeah, I think he booted like a 57 or 58 yarder. Awesome. And now I'm giving him love because I gave him love 2 weeks ago, too. So it hasn't been a thing to jinx our guy.
His long of the year so far is 54. He's 6 of 7. Again, if I was going to mention it, that's what I would tell you. But we're not I'm not talking about it on the show.
All right.
Hopefully K9 is back this week. That would be huge.
Yeah.
We need to get both of our backs going way that they got two of their backs going.
Absolutely. But you want to show some love, it's got to be Sharps, man. And we were sitting there watching it together, all of us up there. And I was like, if he's just a little more patient, you know, and Kennedy Pola, who coaches him right now. He was our running back coach at SC when we won all those titles and beat the Huskies every year. And sorry, I forgot where I was going there. Ouch. But I think what he, like, just like I said, I go, if he just takes a little more time, a little more patience, like, guys will get, you know, greedy or nosy, and they'll supposed to be in the A gap, and then they'll peek their head over to the B gap, and that's when you hit the crease. When he slowed down, I think it's just something that comes with reps and experience, but it looked great. And so now I think he knows how to run in this offense. Not like he didn't know how to run. It's just like, he was probably just a little excited. And he was, dude, I watched him run into, forget whose back it was, one of his own linemen, just smoked him in the back. Like, that shit hurts the next day, man.
Yeah, he got a game ball after the last game from coach, so that had to feel good. The locker room clearly loves him. I think if you said to most fantasy owners after 3 weeks that Zach Charbonnet would have as many touchdowns as Montgomery, a lot of people would sort of, you know, raise their eyebrows about that. 40 rushes on the year for 141. He's 3.5 per, so a full yard less than Montgomery in the average. But I mean, the production's there. And when he gets close to the goal line, he can smell the goal line and get it in, which is, I mean, that's what you need, you know? And like we talked about, I think after week two, it's like it might not necessarily be the runs you want or the most beautiful runs that jump off of a highlight reel, but when you need to get it done, he's getting it done.
Oh, dude. And I won't ever second guess his decision-making again. That touchdown run was a thing of beauty. It was harder than it had to be. And I mean, of course, when you're, you know, several hundred feet up in the air watching it from that vantage point, it's like, oh, how do you miss that hole? Because shit happens quick out there, which we talked about. But I think it was either me and Cliff or me and Bruce Irvin that were just sitting right there watching the game. And as he got the ball, if he just stayed front side, like he could have walked into the end zone. Instead, he barreled through the smallest crevice and ran over a guy and then outran another one and into the end zone. I mean, it was he got it the hard way right there, but yeah. It was it could have been easier. And that's what I think these reps are going to do for him, and just to trust his initial instinct. But that take it back to that Patriots game when he bounced it all the way around.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but you just look back at the overtime after the big, you know, first down we got throwing it to him. It was supposed to be hit up inside, and he was just like, "I see space. I'm going outside 9 yards." Right. And then he made two guys, you know, regret their decision.
Yeah. Well, we got to ask Kenny McIntosh when he gets here about Charbonnet and just about the running back room in general. Right. And like what makes those guys so special? I think, you know, let's get some perspective inside the house
and what he's learning from them. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. that was the biggest thing when I was a rookie, you know, all the vets that I had that, you know, take you under the wing and just like teach you the defense and, you know, just everything. It was cool. I had a great bunch of OGs, as they call it.
Yeah. And McIntosh is, it's his second year though, right? Cause he was hurt all of it. So it's basically almost his rookie year, right? Cause he's finally healthy almost. So
yeah.
But, receiver wise, I mean, DK, JSN, Tyler Lockett and all that going up against this line secondary, we'll get into it more with Glover Quinn, but I mean, DK so far this year is just going off, and the relationship, the chemistry between him and Gino, there's even like inside jokes, different things that they're talking about at the podium and in interviews, and the chemistry between them on the field and off the field seems to be on point. And I mean, that's fueling some great football from the two of them.
DK looks even faster, and I don't know how, if it's even possible, but when he slowed down to make that catch, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then he hit – the guy was in a full sprint after him, and then he pulled away from him. And I think that's what we all noticed when we were there live watching the game. Yeah. It was like, that's rare right there. So – and I just love the way they're using him, whether it's full speed routes. Like, give it to the man full speed and then let him – you know, let everybody else decide how they want to try to tackle him if they can catch him, because the vertical shots are there. It was a beautiful double move. The safety bit, he took off, and then – even the Patriots one, I don't know how they blew that coverage. Like, he didn't even make a move anywhere but downfield. And I think it was like 30 yards of separation when he caught the ball.
We got to repost this maybe, but the Seahawks put out on social media, maybe we'll repost it on our social media. But they put out the DK touchdown against the Dolphins, but they did a picture in picture with Rabel in the booth announcing it, and like when he catches it and Rabel's like, oh, he makes the catch, but then as he starts to pull away, like Rabel notices it too, his eyes get big, he's like, and he's pulling away. I mean, I was getting goosebumps listening to the call and that video, because of, like you said, just, man, he it's like I honestly don't know if I've ever seen someone do that, like that, how that play looked, slowing down and then speeding up again. It just, I mean, he could have ran for another 100 yards and they wouldn't have caught him.
No chance. But that was what we were like all in awe of. We were just like, damn, that guy didn't catch him. Like, he slowed down almost to like a jog and then just hit the burners. And, oh man, how funny was it when we were up there though? Like, you hear like me, Cliff and Bruce at the same time, like, we're going downtown. Like before Gino even like threw or looked to, as soon as I saw that step, that jab step, and then takeoff, it's just, you know, years of experience, like the trained eye. And so, you know, the further you get away from the ball it's so much slower. So now we're up in the stands. We're just like, oh shit, we're going downtown, boys. You know, like I said, get the beers ready. Here we go. And it's so much fun too when you're up there. Like I saw it when I was a coach too. Sitting in that booth, I was just like, oh shit, that guy's wide open. I hope they don't see him. They didn't, thank God, you know, because there was one play right after we turned it over. Thompson threw it to the flats. The hook, we were playing zone. And in zone, there's windows, ladies and gentlemen. So the first look window is the initial opening, right? And then there's going to be a defender. Once you cross past that defender, you're now in the second look window of the zone. And so in the second look window, the guy was just sitting there just like, I'm right here. And me and Cliff, like, right, grabbing each other, like, oh! And he threw it to the flats. We're like, whoo!
Do you recognize this stuff pre-snap? Or is it, I mean, like, did you know they're throwing it to DK pre-snap? Or is it because of the route, the DK? Okay.
No, it's as soon as the information unfolds. And I just saw the speed at which he was running, and I was like, he ain't hitting the brakes.
Right.
Other than to catch it, but I'm saying, like, and even the safety, you could see him, like, the panic. I wish I could get a close up of his eyes. Like, oh shit.
No stretch.
You take one wrong step, man, it's over.
You guys check us out on social media. It's at All Day Family. Family all spelled out. It's we got the Instagram working. We're also up on Twitter now. So go over, give those accounts a follow, show them some love, and interact with them over there. We got to get the video up of the picture in picture. We'll just repost it from the Seahawks, I think. But the Ray Bull call of the DK thing was awesome. I want to get into stuff with Glover Quinn. So let's bring him in and get a Lions perspective on all of this. We'll be right back. This is the 2014 NFL interceptions leader, a Pro Bowler in 2014, 5'11", 207 pounds from Macomb, Mississippi. It's Glover Quinn, everybody, friend of the show, making his triumphant return.
Hey, I got to update that Wikipedia. I'm not 207 anymore. I've been retired for 6 years. I'm probably 240 right now.
Nah, you should leave it.
240? What a beast.
Though. Oh, okay.
No. Muscle though, not a fat 240. I mean, I'm probably natural 230.
Wow.
It was hard for me to be 207 as a defensive back.
Man. Oh, you had to cut weight to stay there.
No question. But I never missed weight in 10 years.
Beast. Came in with the Houston Texans, played a majority of his career with the Detroit Lions as a safety. I mean, tell us about this Lions squad this year. Introduce us to these guys, Glover.
Man, you know what? I think you got a team that's more experienced the NFC Championship game last year, you know, all the way up to the halftime, had that game.
Yeah.
They could smell the Super Bowl. And it didn't work out. It's the football gods. It just didn't work out for them. And so I think they're more experienced. The core guys are back from an O-line standpoint, quarterback standpoint, wide receiver standpoint. Both running backs are back. Defensively, you still got the D-line, the core guys, the linebackers, the secondary, the safeties are back. They added, you know, young corner, and Terrion Arnold traded and got Carlton Davis. So they got a couple pieces. But the core of the team, for the most part, is back. Jameson Williams is – you know, his first two games were pretty explosive, pretty good. Didn't do much his last game. But this has been his first year of being healthy in the offseason. You know, his first year coming in, he was coming off the injury. And then last year was healthy, but had the suspension hanging over his head from, you know, the gambling or the betting on college sports or whatever it was. In the locker room or on campus or something like that. So you're going through training camp knowing that you're suspended for the first 6 weeks. It's a little different. But this year he had a full off season of being healthy, not having to worry about that type of stuff. He had a great training camp. So he was able to come in these first 2 weeks and really showed the ability that he has. But the way that the offense is set up, it's going to be hard for every last one of those guys to get off every week. You know, if the running game is going, then it's going to be like last week. You're going to have 180, 200 yards rushing, but you're probably not going to have as many big plays down the field because we're just running the ball. In the perfect world, you want to probably have 150, 160 yards rushing and another 200 passing where you got a couple big plays in there, play action shots over the top. But it don't always work out like that. But for the most part, they're a pretty balanced team that's more experienced, hungry to try to get back to where they were and to see if they can get over that hump.
Lots of weapons on offense. St. Brown, Jameson Williams, like you mentioned, David Montgomery, Gibbs, Laporta. I mean, just like weapons everywhere. How would you attack this offense if you were the Seahawks defense?
I mean, I would attack it through, you know, stopping the run on your way to putting pressure on Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how I would attack it. I would say, hey, you know, we're going to have to stack the box and we're going to blitz and we're going to do everything that we can to stop this run. And if they don't run it, we're on our way to sack Jared Goff or at least put pressure on him. Because Jared Goff struggles a little bit when he has pressure on him. We saw that in week two against Tampa Bay. You know, didn't play a great game, but they didn't come out and try to establish the run that game. They came out throwing the ball all game, and I don't know if that's Jared Goff's strength. Not saying he's not a good quarterback, but I think he lives off of the play action and the run game. And when they come out and just try to be a drop-back passer, I don't know if that's what he's best at. And so I would come out, hey, we're going to come downhill attacking the running backs, and if they don't hand it off, you just keep going till you get to the quarterback.
There's lots of injuries. Through 3 weeks in the NFL, there's a lot of injuries for all these teams. But the Lions are just as banged up as the Seahawks, especially on the offensive line. Is that correct?
Yeah, they got a few guys out. I think Ragnow's been out. You know, anytime you lose a center – that's a Pro Bowler, all pro type of player. That's a key piece of your O-line right there. Like losing one guy like that could make your whole O-line feel like you lost a lot. You know what I'm saying? You could get away with a guard here or there, but if you lose that left tackle or that center, especially that center, because most of those times those guys are calling out the protections. They're getting everybody on the same page. And so having somebody to anchor the middle of that O-line is super important. But, yeah, they've been banged up on the O-line. But at the end of the day, I mean, they ran the ball well last week against Arizona. And so they got guys that's been there. That group has actually been there for – the core has been together for a while. They added a couple guys. I think they added Kevin Zeitler, I think, from – I think he came from Cincinnati maybe. I'm not real sure. You know, I actually try to stay away from all of the stuff that goes on throughout the week with the Detroit Lions. I literally like to watch the games and report on what did I see. Doesn't matter who played, who didn't play, yeah. Who was out there and what did I see.
Yeah, I love it. As a former player, I agree. I don't pay too much attention to the injury report, and we still got a game to play, boys.
Right.
Like, next man up, like, let's go. And, you know, and that's the coach's problem or decision to figure out how to, you know, adjust accordingly. But, Glover, you said something that I want to just hit on from last year. What was the feeling in the Lions, like, specifically from a player's point of view, like, you know, when you had the NFC Championship and the Super Bowls right there, was there anything or any reports out of that locker room after, like, the decision to continually go for it rather than kick the field goal? I know these players play hard for Dan Campbell, but that was a tough thing. And if you blow a lead early on in the season, which I don't know if you guys have, like, that can linger over and, you know, become a trend. And that's what I worried about being a former coach.
Right. And I mean, I was at that game in San Francisco, and I was with my best friend, who's a San Francisco fan, right? So, yeah, it was tough because the whole first half, I'm like, yeah, we going to the Super Bowl, and the second half, he's like, yeah, we going to the Super Bowl, right? And you know, you have those times where, you know, as a player, as a fan, we can always, you know, in hindsight say, oh, we should have kicked the field goal. Oh, we should have done these things, right? I can have my opinions and say, hey, in that moment, you take the points, right? In the other moment, maybe you do go for it, right? But Coach Dan Campbell is the coach. He made the decision. Those guys play for Dan. They back him up. They respect it. And, you know, with stuff like that, you got to take the good with the bad. Sometimes the bad is not having a chance to go to the Super Bowl. But you can't, you know, enjoy and respect the decision when it work out for you in week 7, but hate it when it don't work out in the NFC Championship. I know those games are different magnitude, and you just got to trust that the coach is making the right decision, and you got to go out and try to execute at the highest level in that moment, right? Because we can all say it could all go a different way. What if you try to kick the field goal? What if they block it? What if something else happens? And now you're saying, man, if we'd have just went for it, we could have got 3 yards or 4 yards. So hindsight would always look the same. We always would have done whatever it would have been to make it work. It didn't happen in that moment, but I don't think that's going to linger over in the player's mind. I think in the media mind, you know, if they have a situation that comes up early in the season and it don't work out for them, the media would go back and bring up what happened in the NFC Championship game and try to plant that doubt in players' mind. Yeah. But they're just reporting stuff and this and this and that. So players got to do a great job of keeping what happens in the locker room, what happens in our team meeting, the things that we talk about and the identity that we want to have. We got to stay strong and tight in that and just let the media talk, because they're going to report, you know, they're not trying to keep us together in a sense. They're just reporting and controversy, you know, that sells.
Yeah. Do you got a question, Brett?
No, I was just going to make the point that we as fans aren't going to ever know what really happened in those locker rooms in those moments until like 6 or 7 years later when all the players have podcasts. And we're
finally found out. That is the trend that you're seeing, man. And you know, I'm a little different, man. Like, you know, I feel like there are some things that you can talk about from the locker room, but I still feel like there's some things that's just sacred. That is just like, you know, there's not a lot of people in this world that can say that they've been a part of an NFL locker room. And it's just a pride that I take and have. And it's just like, hey, man, you see a lot of stuff in the locker room, man. It's a lot of different people. And you see a lot of stuff, but that's the group of people that were all there trying to win a game, man. It shows that you can be different and be on the same team and go after the same goal. So I'm not here to, you know, talk about a lot of the things that happens in the locker room.
Yeah. No, well, you got to have that trust, right? Right. You got to have that trust, because if you don't trust your fellow teammates or that things are sacred in there, then you can't truly be yourself and be at the top of your game. You got to be yourself to be at the top of your game, don't you?
Right. And I feel like that's a part of being a leader. And I feel like if you were like that as a player, you're going to be like that 6 years later. If you was one of those guys, even when you were playing, that you would talk about stuff, talk about the team, say stuff about guys on the team and not really try to, you're going to be the one that was talking about what was going on in the locker room, who was this, who was that. You're going to be that guy. If you was one of those guys that while you were playing, you were a leader in the locker room, everybody trusted you because you wasn't running, telling their business to everybody. You wasn't telling the media everything that was going on. If you didn't do that stuff while you were playing, I don't think you're going to be doing that stuff while your retirement. Now, like I say, you may reference, hey, man, yeah, we had a couple situations in the locker room where, you know, this kind of happened or that, and you kind of give a vague picture because you're trying to tell a story, but mm-hmm. to start putting people's business hours and stuff like that, like, I can't
get that's it. Bullshit.
Well, yeah, that's bullshit. Let's get back to this current locker room.
Who are the leaders? Who are introduced to the leaders over there? Because that's how a team goes. As your leaders go, the team goes. So who are the leaders on that team?
Well, you know, I think if you start, you know, defensively, you got to say Aiden Hutchinson. You know, he's been the guy that's been consistent there for 3 years, first round draft pick for those guys. And he just bleeds Michigan. You know, he's from there. Like, he just bleeds it. He works it. he's one of those guys that's going to be the leader. Alex Anzalone in the middle is leader. And then on the back end, you know, Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph, both of those guys have stepped up and been, even Ben Young, they've been leaders in that regard. And then the offensive side, a little more veteran side, obviously you're going to have Jared Goff, the quarterback, and then Penei Sewell, Taylor Decker, that O-line is stacked with, like, veteran guys that, you know what I'm saying, I think all those guys have that role of a leadership. You're going to have, obviously, the quarterback that people are going to, like, follow and lead, but he has great bodyguards, right? He has great guys because as a leader, yeah, you want to be able to stand alone and be able to stand, but it's a lot better when you have guys that got your back, right? Hey, I feel like we need to do this right here. We're not practicing hard. We're not doing things the right way. So I'm going to stand up and say something, and you have those other guys that got your back, and you lead the team. And I think with Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Taylor Decker, Penei Sewell, they got plenty of guys on the O-line, on the offensive side of the ball. I would say those are the leaders.
Let's talk about your specialty, though, the secondaries on both sides, both teams here. I mean, hot young secondary here in Seattle has a lot of people whispering about, you know, some other teams from the past and the secondaries that we've had around here. But as you look at it, you know, Lofa and I were talking about earlier in the game as a former pro, the way that you look at it, I mean, what makes these guys special here in Seattle? Have you been able to watch much of this defense up here?
I actually haven't watched that much of it. You know, I've seen clips. I've seen things.
Julian Love balling out. Witherspoon.
Witherspoon has been playing well for a long time, right? But we've seen that. And a lot of the times, the guys who are the leaders, people tend to play like that in a sense. Witherspoon is one of those guys. He plays all over the place. He loves to play the game. He's physical. He's smart. Those are the type of guys that you're going to have. Mm-hmm. Those are the type of guys that you're going to have. And that's the way that they're going to play, because he's not going to let the standard sag off from what it should be. If you're not playing hard, he's going to say something. If you're not playing tough and physical, he's going to say something. And so when you have those guys that can put it on the field, but they also be that much invested in each other, in the practice, in the film room, then that's what you're going to see out there on the field. So it doesn't surprise me when you get these groups that are playing well, when the leaders are guys that are locked into football and it mean a lot to them. Nowadays, I don't know if it means a lot to all these guys in the NFL.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to say to people, because so many people just want to play in the NFL. So it's hard for them to fathom people can be in the NFL and it not be important to them. But that's the thing. Sometimes people are just there and they just happy to be there. You know what I'm saying?
And then that's one of the most frustrating things. When I was a leader, and you have a guy that just does not care about football. They're great at football, but they just, like, it's not in their heart. And, like, you know, I've been just like Globe. I've been dreaming of this shit since I was seven, like telling everybody since I was seven, I'm going to the league. But your secondary and those two safeties, love watching both of them play. And I know you do too, because they play hard and they make a lot of plays just like you. Our receiving core, right? DK, JSN, Lockett. And then Noah Fant's been, you know, getting his share of targets. Does that at all concern you?
It does. It does, because, you know, the thing that, from a safety standpoint, the thing that you don't like going into a game, for the most part, is a team that really, really, really has vertical threats that are real, right? It's a difference when you play a team and they got one guy that'll take you up top, but everybody knows who that one person is. So when you have a team with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, like, these guys are known for attacking down the field. So for a safety, You can't get caught being nosy up around the line of scrimmage. You can't get caught with your eyes in the backfield, right? You can't get caught. I mean, you see the route DK had last week, right? He come in on the – like, you can't get caught flat-footed. So that tends to soften you up a little bit because you know they got the real ability to take you up top, right? When teams don't really threaten you up top, it's very difficult because now those safeties, they're not afraid. They're going to be packed in there, so the middle of the field is going to be tough to attack. But when that defense has to respect those deep guys, it's tougher. And, you know, we've always struggled. I don't know what it is about Detroit, man. We've always struggled with Seattle, man. I don't know what it is about you guys.
Especially recently.
No idea. Since I've been there. When I was in Detroit, we had the Calvin Johnson fumble game. Y'all smacked the ball out the back of the end zone. We had that game. We had another game in the playoffs. We had another game in we've always struggled against Seattle. Now, when I was in Houston, this was back in 2009, we didn't struggle against Seattle.
Relax. I was there too. We were terrible. Get out of here.
I think Andre Johnson took True Fun up top. First play of the game, right? First play of the game.
Hey, don't talk about my cornerback.
Hey, man. Hey, I love True Fun. And, you know, that was fun. But it's something about Detroit, right? They struggle with Seattle. We've struggled with Seattle in the past. So hopefully this year we can get over that hump and, you know, it's Monday Night Football. It's homecoming for Detroit. Calvin Johnson is going into the pride of the Lions. I'll be in the building. Let's go, baby.
Okay.
Well, how about Geno Smith? How about our quarterback here? I want to get sort of your opinion, more of a national perspective, because here he is. He's 3-0 starting out this season. He's putting up great numbers again, yet seemingly getting no respect nationally yet again. So why is that? And then also just your thoughts in general on Geno Smith and his game.
Well, I think for Geno, I think he likes that. You know, I think for a guy like Geno who, you know, coming out of college had a certain type of reputation and then going through what he went through in the Jets and just kind of how his career has gone, I think he loves the underdog mentality. I think he has that chip on his shoulder. And so it's nothing better to keep that chip than to – you know, be playing well and nobody's even talking about you. That just keeps motivating you to keep going out and doing what you do. And, you know, Loafer probably noticed a lot of coaches, a lot of teams, they love having 1 o'clock games on Sundays, right? Because we just get to go and play. We don't have to deal with Sunday night football. We don't have to deal with Monday nights. We don't have to deal with all these prime. Like, we just want to go and play and just kind of stay under the radar and just keep doing what we're doing. Because once the national media starts to – now it starts bringing extra attention, extra stuff, and we want to try to keep a narrow focus. And I really think that's what Geno likes. Because Geno, I mean, he's off to a great start. But like I said, going back to last year, Geno was what I felt like hurt the Lions last year. You know, keeping plays alive on third down, scrambling and getting first downs, just staying alive in the pocket, giving DK and those guys Tyler Lockett time to run all the way across the field. I feel like that's what hurt the Lions last year when they played. So got a lot of respect for Geno and what he's been able to do and the system that they've been able to build around him and how he's been able to have turn his career around in Seattle. And I think he likes the role that he plays there, the guys that he get to play with. And I think it's been a good fit for Geno.
Yeah. You guys, our guest right now, Glover Quinn of the Believe in Lions podcast, Believe spelled our way, B-L-E-A-V, Believe in Lions podcast, co-hosted by Brandon Brown, joining us here. Only thing to do with you before we get you out of here is a score prediction, Lofa, right? We got to get a prediction from our guy.
We got to know what you think, brother.
We do this because of our sponsor, Simply Seattle. I already mentioned them, but you guys can find our post. You predict the score in the comments. If you nail it, you get a gift card. Or if you nail it, if multiple people nail it, they're put in to get a drawing of a gift card, Katie. But what's the score going to be?
Oh, man. I suck at these, to be honest with you.
I suck. So do we. Lofa and I have been doing this score prediction challenge now for, 4 or 5 seasons? I don't think we've ever nailed one.
No.
You know, I think I think, like I said, I think the Lions, we always struggle with Seattle a little bit. And Seattle is coming in hot right now, playing with a lot of confidence. So I don't think it's going to be an easy game for sure. I think it's going to be 24-27.
24-27. Who you got winning that
one? Lions.
Oh, come on. Okay.
24-27. Because I don't want to say 21-24, because that's just three touchdowns. It very rarely happens that way. There's going to be a field goal somewhere in there.
Yeah. It's an indoor game. So,
24-17, 24-27. It's going to be something like that. 24, I think three touchdowns and a field goal. I think that's – it's going to be tough, though. It's going to be tough.
It's a good prediction. NFL,
so I can't give it a – I can't give it a Saints score like 15-13. I don't think it's that. You know, that's an anomaly nowadays. Although I have been really impressed with how the defenses have been playing to start the season. Like, I've really been impressed with how they've been playing. You know, everybody's talking about the offensive numbers are down. I'm sitting here like the defenses have been playing good football.
Yeah, I know the both of you love that.
Speaking of good defenses, the Seahawks are going to shut you guys down. That's all I'm saying. All right. You tell Jared Goff and all the guys I said it. They've just really impressed me. So, and I think this is where Geno, he does a lot of great work in Detroit. I don't know if you know. Have you guys heard? His numbers are pretty awesome. So, I'm going to go. We're going with 31-17.
Hawks. Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to. We're only giving up two touchdowns.
A relaxing Monday night. I like that.
Dumping us a homecoming?
Yep.
You heard it here first.
Hey, wait, no. This is a real stat, though. When a player gets recognized, at least this was when I was playing. I don't know. I'll have to go back and check the trend now. When they're getting recognized, the team who's recognizing usually loses. When we went down, we were there at Reggie White night in Philly. We beat, I think that was the massacre. I think it was 42-0. There was another game. I'm gonna get these stats over to you though. I can't remember the other. There was two other instances where someone was getting awarded or recognized, and their team lost.
I'm with Lofa on this one. It's Calvin Johnson also, which is, I mean, absolute legend. But they asked DK about Calvin Johnson and DK had a lot of great things to say and all that. But for me, that just means DK is aware of what's going on and he wants to have his own sort of Megatron game for this one. So give me the Seahawks 38, but give me Detroit at 30. I think they're going to score. I think it's a shootout. I think it's a high scoring offensive affair with the injuries that we're facing and these two offenses going back and forth. I think it's going to be an entertaining game, but I think that we're going to be able to score some points here.
Yeah. Glover, you guys are going to need Calvin Johnson's suit up to have a chance. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, all I know is last year I went to homecoming. They inducted Lomas Brown into the Pride of the Lions and we whooped up on the Raiders. So I expect it to be the same thing.
It was an anomaly. I can assure you.
Glover, thanks for being here, man. We love chatting with you, and I'm sure we'll do it again in the future.
Oh, wait, Glover, before you go, I know you got a framing business.
Yeah, you need to let me get that Walter, man.
I framed that myself. I wanted you to critique it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He said, yeah.
Keep going. We need a real review.
It's in there. It's in there.
Oh no.
That's all I can say. It's in there.
I was trying to get the Hawk in there, but he couldn't do it. You know, but no, seriously, everybody, you gotta check it out. Glover, what's the name of it? Because it's beautiful work.
Man. GQ Frames is where I do my framing on Instagram, GQ_frames. If you go to my, you know, personal page, Glover Quinn, you can look at in the bio and it'll have my framing. You can just click on it. So yeah, it's fun. I kind of try to have fun with it, man. I try to really encourage players to get their stuff right, man, because there's so many players that will leave the game. And you know how it is, man. When we leave the game, it don't matter how many years you play. When you leave the game, you're walking out of the locker room with your stuff in a box or a bag. You know what I'm saying? Your whole locker is in a bag. And so many players are so quick to try to separate themselves from the game so that we can show that we're more than football players. But at the end of the day, football has been a huge part of your life, your whole journey. So that should be celebrated. So get those jerseys out of the box. Get them out the attic. And put those things up so that you can see it and be reminded every day. Your kids can see it. The people that come to your house, you know, because that's a huge accomplishment. Whether you play 10 years or 1 year, just to be able to say that you got an NFL jersey with your name on the back, I'm sure it's led you to where you are in life right now. So you should be reminded of any accomplishment or even a failure, just to let people know, hey, man, I made it. And it didn't go how I wanted it to go, but I learned so much on my journey, and that's made me who I am today. So I try to encourage all my guys, man. If you don't let me frame it, you don't have to, but get it out, get it framed, get those things up, pictures. It just makes you feel so much better when you see that stuff every day.
Amen, brother. I appreciate you as always, man.
Thank you, man. No problem, man. Let's do it again.